Welcome back, my friend. It's ADHD Coach Catherine, and this week, ADHD Powerful Possibilities continues our look at the journey of ADHD women and girls throughout their life. This is useful for everyone, but of course, with International Women's Day, I wanted to celebrate some of the unique challenges that we face. So I hope you are enjoying the episodes and that they are valuable for you. If not personally, then they give you insight into what life is like for 51% of the population. I'm going to apologise in advance for my croaky throat. I don't know what is going on here, but every single one of us is sick and it is not going away. So thank you for your patience. I will do my best to edit out the coughs, sneezes, splutters, etc. And thank you for the continuing supportive emails, messages and contacts. The reason I make the podcast is to help you understand yourself, your ADHD, and to share positive strategies and information that you can trust and rely on. And I'm very glad that it's doing exactly that. So let's get into today's focus. We are looking at the stage in life from adolescence through into early adulthood. Let's recap. What is ADHD? Apart from possibly the worst named neurodevelopmental difference in the world, because we have plenty of attention and not all of us are externally or obviously hyperactive. ADHD is most obvious in things like our executive functions, which can include attention, focus, time awareness, planning, working memory, but also includes your emotions and your emotional regulation or management. Back in the olden days, before 2010, 2000, it was very common for people to think ADHD only affected children and it mostly affected boys. There were very few young women, hardly any older women, who were diagnosed with ADHD in the UK. And when people say, oh, you grow out of ADHD, what they tend to mean is either you've developed strategies and other mechanisms to cope with the areas of your brain that are causing you problems in your youth. Maybe they just mean your ADHD no longer inconveniences me. And that could be one of the reasons why, until very recently, the average age of diagnosis for women was in their 30s. I hope that is changing. So there are some specific things we need to think about when we talk about girls and women with ADHD. Our cultural bias, our social expectations, and then the impact of hormones as well on our brain, on our development, and particularly the section we're looking at today, which is from adolescence, puberty, through into young adulthood. One of the big challenges that we face is when we move from a small single class into junior high or secondary school in the UK. And that move comes at a time when not only are you facing physical changes in terms of your hormones and social changes, you're also placing a big demand neurologically on your executive functions. Transitioning from primary or middle school up into secondary or junior high is a uniquely challenging time in a person with ADHD's life, especially for young girls. One of the crucial differences is the increase in workload and the requirement to have different books, different classes, different teachers, a different set of students in the room with you perhaps. And from an ADHD point of view, this is an incredible leap in our executive function demand. We know, although that ADHD is a structural and neurochemical difference, your brain is physically different. The way we experience that is our executive functions. And so planning, organising, working memory, as well as things like emotional regulation, are all executive functions. There are more of them. And if you have ADHD, these demands and increases in expectation may come at a time that is not developmentally appropriate. You may be 12, but in your executive functions, you may be 9 or 8. And if you imagine putting a child of 8 into a secondary school, you wouldn't, because you know they're not going to cope. And so if we can diagnose children earlier or spot the signs earlier, we can build that scaffolding around them. And of course, the other thing that happens is the social pressures ramp up exponentially. And when you move from your single, simple classroom up to junior high or secondary, you have all these extra people, these unspoken social roles. Don't forget, there's a high crossover between autism spectrum and ADHD, and some of us struggle with social unwritten rules and challenges. But for ADHD people, especially ADHD girls, because their peers are maturing very quickly socially, and our impulsivity, our emotional control, and our missing social cues, either because we're not paying attention or because we've jumped to something else, can all make that gap between us and our peers appear much larger. And it is all tied together with our expectation for independence and growing independence. And our young girls and women want to be independent too. Quite often I've heard them say things like, I should be able to do this at my age, especially if they're kind of 14 or 15. My friends can do this when they're 16 or 17. And that message quickly becomes one of, I'm wrong, I'm broken, I'm just not good enough. If we throw the responsibility for managing your books, managing your homework, managing your transport, managing exam preparation and so on, onto these young people, it's no wonder that many of them start to feel really stressed and unhappy. What can we do to support them at this point? Self-advocacy is one of the most important tools that you can give a young person. And that means being able to understand what they need and clearly and simply explain to adults in the room what they need and why. They need to be able to communicate their ADHD needs. They need the confidence to be able to say, can I sit at the front of the class so that I am less distracted by other people? Can I have an extra week on the essay? Although with the essay, I sometimes wonder if an extra week is actually very helpful. I mentioned this last week, in an appropriate way, dropping into the conversation what they will need and how to accommodate their needs, we can share language that allows them to advocate for themselves. And we can use that at home. Another thing that I've found very useful personally and with clients is thinking about accommodations and support. Now, obviously, school may require a diagnosis, a formal diagnosis, to be able to apply for things like extra time in exams, using keyboards instead of writing if somebody has dysgraphia. And that's more common than you would think. But I'm thinking more about support in terms of things like timetable management. Create a shared calendar that you both have on your phones so that they feel some control and ownership over their time and actions. You may need to help set it up for them. Google Calendar or Notion Calendar are perfect for this. They're not expensive. Most people have mobile phones or computers. Children in Scotland all have iPads when they go to secondary school. You can install these things so that they are given a visual reminder of what's coming up for them and are able to share in how that works. You're able to share how you are planning ahead with them, not for them. The other thing that's very helpful in secondary school is coaching. Obviously, I would say that I'm an ADHD coach and I'm working on resources and a group for secondary school students in their later years who need help around planning executive functions and preparing for the transition from school to university. But coaching can be done by other pupils. You can create a little group. There's a fantastic book called Coaching Students with Executive Skills Deficits, and I will include a reference to that in the show notes so you can look it up. It's a bit dry, it's a bit academic, but if you're a teacher who's interested in setting up an executive function coaching program where pupils support each other, I'm very happy to help talk you through that. And that book is one that I would go to in the first instance. But why would you use coaching? First of all, coaching is a partnership. It allows young people to have some agency and some control in the relationship. It's also very practical and very forward focused. And a lot of young people don't really want to spend time looking at the past and talking over their trauma, which you do in counselling and therapy, and which is incredibly valuable. For some, that's necessary. But if it's a practical thing like feeling organised for school, preparing your work, you might find that coaching is more acceptable to them and gets them used to the idea of using their creative thinking, their problem solving, and using these scaffolding type tools in a way that works for them at an earlier stage. Because it's not just about your academic results, it's about your organisation, your strategy, your planning, and your how you feel about yourself when you're able to do these things. If you go for academic coaching, make sure the person is trained and qualified to support a student with ADHD. Another thing that's really valuable for parents to introduce early for young people is mindful moments. Not a mindfulness practice per se, because outside of the context or background that these mindfulness programs were developed in, it can be a little bit unsettling, to say the least. But using a mindful moment to reconnect and to co-regulate your emotions and your physical response is absolutely fine. And those are very short breathing exercises, just one or two breaths or an observation to distract them from that feeling of overwhelm and anxiety in the moment. I've referenced a few of those before, and they will be in the emotional toolkit, which is out later this week. You might also want to spend some time thinking about time management. You might want to look for things like how to teach the sweep of time. And my number one recommendation is an analog clock at home, in class, on their wrist. Yes, you can use a digital watch as well, but many of them come with analog type faces. But understanding how time is passing and how much time they need to do things, start as early as you can. And finally, think about how they can build a supportive network around them. It doesn't have to be people at school, it can be extracurricular activities, and those are going to change as they get older. See if you can sign up for one or two classes just so they get a feel of trying different things and they're able to discover people like them. Look for groups that offer collaboration, that give them space for creativity, for problem solving. And if you have to, communicate with the adults in charge of the group about any accommodation or needs that may be necessary. I think we need to have a whole separate section on exams and ADHD, so I will look at that in April. But for now, what happens when your young person has successfully navigated secondary school and is thinking about what comes next? We think of university and college, but they may also go into the workplace. They may take on an apprenticeship. And if that's the case, we're going to look at each of those options here. Thinking about college and university, the biggest difference is the amount of self-management that they are required to do. If things were challenging when they went from junior high into high school, it's going to be even more demanding in university. You are required to plan papers that could last for a whole semester. If it's a dissertation, you may have a whole year to plan for it. How can you sustain that interest for the whole year? Quite often I meet students who are cramming things in at the very last minute because they had 6 months to write the paper, and 6 months is, you know, an eternity, until it's definitely not. And of course, in college and university, the academic demands change. Perhaps it's less about the right and wrong answers and more about flexible thinking, creative problem solving, being able to build an argument with a variety of sources. And for lots of young people, that's quite a change from how they studied in secondary or high school. They might also struggle showing up for lectures. If lectures are 45 minutes to an hour of sitting down and listening to somebody talk and present at the front of the class, they could be tempted to type their notes while they're listening. In fact, many studies show that the most effective way to understand a lecture is to handwrite particular words. And one of the things I would offer is record the lecture, use an audio recorder, but make notes. yourself by hand. Even if your handwriting's terrible, it doesn't matter. But you need to be able to engage with the material, and typing just doesn't do that. And there's also the social and emotional aspect of moving away from home. And we do have to talk about the significant risk that comes from young people being unsupported and maybe living a few hundred miles away from home. But these young people have got to make new friendships. They may be sharing a flat with somebody who isn't a member of their family for the first time. They're also having to plan what they're going to eat, keep on top of their laundry, make sure that their bills are up to date. So college and university is both fantastic in many ways, and I would never discourage somebody from doing it, but it's a demand. And it's again a place where that gap between an 18-year-old without ADHD and an 18-year-old who has some executive functions around 14 or 15, that's a big difference. What can you do if your young person is going off to university, especially if your girl's going off? First of all, if you don't have a diagnosis before you go, please try to get one before you go, because that means you're able to access the official university support services. They generally want you to have a written diagnosis. And many universities now have a disability support team. They might not offer exactly what your young person needs, but at least it's something. They can offer valuable services like note-taking. They can give you extra time for exams. Some of them even have academic coaching, which really makes a difference when you're dealing with these extended essay deadlines. The next thing you can do is make sure that your young person can develop a structured routine. Try to set it up before they leave home. Help them explore what helps them to get up in the morning. I would be lost without my daylight lamp, because that's the only way I can get up for most of the year. Do they need to have a very simple wardrobe of two or three outfits that they simply rotate? How simple can they make their day-to-day life so that their decision paralysis is reduced? Help them to discover what kind of system works for them. Are they very visual? Do they need things that are going to come up and ping on their watch, on their reminder? Help them to discover that before they leave. And now actually is a great time to start doing that. Again, find out if there are groups at the university that they can join where other young people with ADHD who are neurodivergent can meet and share their experience of the challenges that other people just won't get or understand. Make sure they understand the importance of self-care and that it's not an indulgence. The more they can stick to a sensible routine, that they can incorporate Dr. Nadeau's MENS, you know, mindfulness, exercise, nature, diet, sleep and social connection. If they can incorporate that and understand that this is a non-negotiable, they're going to find it much easier to manage some of the extra challenges that come along. But what if your young person decides they're going to go into the world of work? And I think this is fantastic. I will be honest, when I taught at university, I could tell the difference between students who had taken a year or two gap from school and then come to study, and those who came straight from school. And obviously each person's different. But if your young person is struggling a little bit with issues around executive function and planning, a gap isn't going to do any harm. So try to take the pressure off yourself and off of them to go straight from school into education, higher education. And if they want to work, that is fantastic. They might be able to go into an apprenticeship program where they will have more support and the expectations will be adjusted. But if they're not, and they're going straight into a junior position, or maybe, given the numbers of people with ADHD who are entrepreneurs, they want to set up their own business, how does that work with ADHD? So first of all, understanding what type of career is going to work for them. Think about their strengths. Do the VIA character strengths assessment, which is free, and I will include a link to that in the show notes. But your VIA character strengths test is really important for them to understand what matters, what they bring to a role, not just what they can do, who they are. One of the big problems young people with ADHD face is finding the right type of career. Using a career path planner may ignore their individual strengths and focus on what they're interested in. And as we know, people with ADHD have many interests that change quite often. And they might also have problems with task management and consistency. There are going to be different expectations around what a young person brings to the workplace depending on the type of business. Is it a family mom and pop type store? Is it an apprenticeship program where they're used to lots of young people with different levels of organization? Is it a big multinational? Find out what their expectations are for things like punctuality, consistency, personal presentation and organisation. If a young person's applying somewhere, finding that out and discussing it with them beforehand is really useful. They may not want to disclose that they have ADHD. There's so much negativity in the popular press. Is it any wonder they don't want to disclose that they have ADHD? But if they don't, when they try to apply for accommodation or support, their employer may wonder why they didn't mention it beforehand. Have that conversation with them. Are they open? Are they able to let people know that they have ADHD? And they might also need to think about how they manage their particular ADHD traits, how they show up. If you're in a very stressful and pressured workplace environment, on the one hand, it can keep your interest high for longer, but it can also lead to much more stress longer term. So what can we do? There are specific ADHD career planning and assessment tools, and I have access to one, but it's how do you fit that young person to their job? Give them plenty of time and take the pressure off. We are way past the days when you had a job for life and you started and you were stuck with it. Look globally. What are their skills? What are their strengths? How do they prefer to work? Do they like to be self-organized and self-motivated? Or do they need to be in a team? Think about things that might travel with ADHD, like dysgraphia, dyslexia, dyscalculia. All of those need to be taken into account, but you've got time to do that, especially if you start when they're 15 or 16. Have a think about what workplace accommodations are available and what would actually be useful. There's no point giving somebody who needs music to focus and feel good a pair of noise-cancelling headphones. So make sure that there's flexibility around what's available. Check out how they feel around flexible scheduling. Is it okay if you work from home? Are there teams that you can join to work together so that you're body doubling and working on a similar task? Think about what skills do they need to put into their tool bag to go out into the world of work. Do they need to work on their time management? How they appear to be engaged with people? And it's possible to build skills for all of these. So going into the workplace with ADHD can be exactly what a young person needs if they have found the academic world unfulfilling and not very exciting and it's been stressful for them. And they can go back and study at college or university in their 20s, 30s and 40s. Before we move on, one of the most crucial elements of growing up, whether you have ADHD or not, but especially for girls and young women with ADHD, is the change in friendships and relationships. These are some of the most formative years in terms of our social connections. But we also know that young people, especially young girls with ADHD, feel particularly isolated socially. And when you add in the complicating role of hormones and relationships as we move from just being friends with somebody to having romantic or sexual feelings towards them, those added with ADHD, we need to spend a bit of time looking at what happens and how can we support them. What are the biggest challenges your young girl or teenager with ADHD is likely to experience? In brackets, whenever I say this, of course I mean boys and young men as well, but especially for girls. What are the biggest challenges they're going to face? One is impulsivity. We are often unable to put a zip in it before the words pop out, before we take that action, before we commit to something we maybe shouldn't. People might think we are inconsiderate. They might think we are unpredictable. We might struggle with some social cues. There's debate around what causes the social cue problems with ADHD, it's most likely to be a combination of not paying attention and misreading things, that black and white thinking, as well as just being somewhere else. We're already five steps ahead in the conversation, or we've noticed a squirrel or a cute dog on the other side of the road. So we miss the tiny glance. And with humans, it is that tiny millisecond glance that tells you, is this person taking the mickey out of me, or do they mean it? And one of the other major challenges for people with ADHD is the intensity of our emotions. And I've spoken to many people with ADHD who have incredibly intense feelings for other people and who are almost incapacitated by their obsession with this new person in their life. It becomes all-consuming. Although there are blogs about limerence and this special quality that we sometimes give to people, I do think some of it is to do with our ADHD neurochemistry. But on the other side of that, we might often isolate ourselves because we are so sensitive about being rejected. And whether RSD is a separate diagnosis or not, the intensity of the rejection and how that makes us feel is very real for people with ADHD, and it all comes under the umbrella of emotional regulation, which is an executive function. So what can we do to support young girls, brackets, everyone included, especially young boys, as we go forward through teens into late teens into 20s? Think about your language. What kind of communication are you using at home? I am a huge fan of declarative language. It's the difference between saying to somebody, pick up that shoe, and I notice your shoes are on the floor again. That's it. You just need to wait. And if they look to you for guidance, you say, I wonder where those shoes would be better placed. Or I wonder if it would be easier to find them in the morning if they were somewhere else. Where could that be? That's so different from pick up your shoes or put your shoes away. And one of the differences that declarative language encourages is allowing the young person to develop their own thinking, their own creative solutions for problems that come up in everyday life. It's a very good way to articulate your own thoughts and allow them to practice articulating their thoughts and feelings. The other bonus is that it can improve our flexibility in terms of getting used to things not being right, making mistakes, not being certain of the answer. The next thing to think about is understanding the social needs of young people, young girls with ADHD. Are they real fans of face-to-face, high energy, intensity, activities and friendships? Are they more introverted? And there's no right or wrong here, it's just what we need as people. And then thinking about how does ADHD affect what we need and what we can offer to other people in our relationships. And I think this is particularly relevant for young girls going into relationships. They need to have a very clear idea of what is an acceptable, supportive and respectful relationship. And how can you let them know that whatever happens, you are 100% their safe place, where they can come to and where you will manage your own emotions to support them in the moment? How can you help them practice to set boundaries? I mentioned it briefly before. Can you set healthy boundaries for yourself, for them at home first? What language do we need to have access to for setting those boundaries? And how can we help them to identify what is a healthy and supportive friendship or relationship and what isn't? We want them to find people who are understanding, who are patient. Make sure they recognise the red flags. Things like a lack of boundaries, a lack of respect for the boundaries that they've set, dismissive attitudes towards ADHD or anything else that they're experiencing, and especially for manipulative behaviour. What are the signs that they can look for? You might find that watching some documentaries on things like the Tinder Swindler and all these other wonderful documentaries that talk about relationships and help them to recognise the hallmarks of manipulation and disrespect are great ways to open up that conversation. So to sum up this gigantic leap through teens to early 20s, what are the main things that your teens, especially your teen girls, are going to need? They're going to need a supportive network at home. They need to know how to use things like technology in a way that supports them rather than dominates them. Thinking about how can we help them have a growth mindset. This is one of those cliches, but demonstrating to them that it's okay to learn all the time, that it's okay to make mistakes, it's okay not to know all the answers, and that we're all growing and learning and developing throughout our whole life, and modelling that at home early on is really valuable. Parents, you are facing a really difficult job at the moment. What can you do? Focus on your own self-regulation. Make sure your emotional needs are met and that you are making time to look after yourself. But most importantly, how are you modelling a good life for them? Are you talking through how you organise yourself, just so that they know that adults need to do this too? Are you talking about other people and other challenges in a positive way? Modelling a positive regard for other people who try can help them to recognise that even if things don't go right, you're still going to see how hard they have tried and value it. Although this can be a challenging stage in life for any of us, with ADHD we have to take into account the executive function challenges, the emotional impact, and especially for girls, role of estrogen and hormones as they travel from their early teens through into their 20s. I hope this has given you an overview of each stage and what might crop up depending on where the young person you know is in terms of their age and stage. But most importantly, I hope it's given you some really practical ideas for how you can support yourself and them as they go into the next stage of their life with ADHD. Next week we're going to be looking at the next stage some of us go through, which is when we become parents, and how that can affect our lives with ADHD and what we can do to make it easier for everybody involved. I'm ADHD Coach Catherine, and this is Powerful Possibilities. I'm so grateful for you spending time with me today. You can get in touch with me by email or through my social media. All of the links are in the show notes below. I love hearing from you. If this is helpful, please let me know. Or if you know somebody who is facing this challenging stage, shall we say, please share it with them. Until next week, take care of yourself. And remember to think, what's possible?